Try to imagine a place, a beautifully ordered structure like the Parthenon or Monticello. Imagine that everything is balanced, everything in proportion, everything is smooth and secure. Stick in blue skies overhead, green grass all around, puffy white clouds, flowers, and children running and playing. Now add a couple of hundred years of wear and tear to it. Dull the edges, round the corners a little. Imagine water stains and worn spots where the wind had gotten to it. Turn the skies dirty brown with smog, kill the grass and replace with tall, ugly ragweed. Ditch the flowers and leave in their places only dried up skeletal rose vines. Age the male children into adult winos, faces haggard with despair and self-loathing and flushed with drink. And the girls into tired, jaded strumpets, faces hard, eyes cold and calculating. Give the place of beauty an aura of rage and feral abandon, where people who walk about watch the shadows like a hungry cat, waiting to pounce. And then, after all of that, after all the cares and trials and difficulties of the world the cop inhabits have been fairly represented, coat everything in a thick, sticky, black sludge that smells like swamps and things that attract dun-colored flies, paint it on. Make it a coating that emphasizes the filth, the decay, the despair all around, that brings out the painful decline to the utmost degree. The sludge makes things stronger and more bitter, more rotten, more putrid all at the same time. That was Denton inside. A good man, jaded by years and poisoned by the power that had taken control of him, until that good man had been buried and only the filth and decay remained. Until the existence of the man who had once been was only a bitter reminder that made the man who was now seem all the more downfallen by comparison. I understood Denton's pain and his rage, and I understood how the dark power he'd taken had pushed him over the edge. There was an image of him kneeling at someone's feet as a wolf fur belt was passed into his hands, and then it was gone. Knowing the man he had once been made clear to me the beast he had become, all violence and hunger and craving. I felt tears on my cheeks and violent shudders shaking down my spine. I could pity Denton and the others with him, but now, more than ever, they scared the crap out of me. I had bought myself a few seconds, at least, with the soul gaze, but would it be enough to keep Denton from blowing my head off? Denton stared at me as the soul gaze broke and we both released. He wasn't reacting well to whatever it was he had seen inside of me. His face had gone white, and his hands were trembling, the barrel of his gun wavering every which way. He lifted his other hand to mop beads of cold sweat away from his face. "No," Denton said, white, showing all the way around the gray irises of his eyes. "No, wizard," he raised his gun. "I don't believe in hell. I won't let you." He screamed then, at the top of his lungs, "I won't let you!" I tensed up, preparing for a futile attempt to throw myself out of the way of the speeding bullet. "Yes," said a calm voice, "you will." A bright red dot appeared right in the middle of Denton's chest, cheerful as a Christmas light. I twisted my head around to see Marconi walking over the turf, his weapon pointed steadily at Denton, Hendricks looming to one side. Denton's lackeys were watching Marconi with bright, steady eyes. Murphy lay on the grass, her feet toward me, her head away. I couldn't see what condition she was in, and both fear and frustration leapt up into me for her sake. "Marconi," Denton said, his back straightened and his eyes narrowed. "You treacherous scum." Marconi clucked with his teeth. "Our bargain was that you would bring him to me alive, not execute him. Additionally, you may want to rethink the wisdom of using your own weapons. Let MacFinn kill him when he arrives." "If he arrives," Denton snarled. "My spotters," Marconi said, "tell me that the animals I sent out with them went mad with fear about 2 minutes ago, 3 miles west of here." "I think it will not take him much longer to show up, Mr. Denton." His smile widened, but his money-colored eyes grew harder. "Now, shall we cease antagonizing one another and finish our business?" Marconi lowered the rifle and flicked the laser sight off. Denton looked from me to Marconi, and I saw the blackness rise up in his eyes, gather behind them, and get ready to come rolling out. "Marconi," I said, "just shoot him now."
"I think we've both had enough of your attempts to divide and conquer, Mr. Dresden," Marconi said, his voice bored. "You're beaten. Acknowledge it with grace."
I watched a slow smile spread over Denton's face as he kept the gun pointed at my head. My voice rose by a couple of notes of alarm. "I mean it, John. I really do. I shit you not. This entire thing is about them killing you."
"What a vulgar reassurance," Marconi said. "Agent Denton, we have a few details to attend to. Lower your gun and let us be about them."
"I don't think so," Denton said. And he pointed at Hendricks and started pulling the trigger. The gun roared so many times, so quickly, that I couldn't tell how often Denton fired. Hendricks snapped back onto his heels and then was driven flat onto his back by the force of the bullets slamming into him. He didn't have time to twitch, much less scream, and he dropped like a felled tree. I felt it in the earth when his massive body hit the ground. Marconi started to raise his gun, but Wilson and Harris hurled at his back and dragged him to the ground, pounding on him with their fists. Marconi writhed like an eel and slipped away from them, but Denton stepped into his path and thrust a gun into Marconi's face.
"That's enough," he said, his voice grown coarse. "Get them all and take them to the pit. McFinn will be there any moment."
I took a moment to roll to my hands and knees and attempt to slip away unnoticed, but was brought up short by a pair of bare, muscular, feminine legs. My gaze followed the legs up, past the skirt, to a magnificently bare-breasted torso encircled by a wolf pelt belt. And then to a face dominated by eyes made eerie by the lack of anything recognizably sentient in them. Ben smiled at me, set her foot against my wounded shoulder, and with a sadistic twist of her ankle and a shove of her muscled leg, sent searing pain screaming through my body, making me crumple to the ground in agony. I remember them dragging me across the grounds. We passed into a ring of evergreens, and I remember thinking that any sounds originating in that circle of pines would be heavily muffled by their branches and needles, further muffled by the trees surrounding the property, as well as the high stone wall. Gunshots, for example, might not even be heard at all off the property. It was the clearest thought I had while my shoulder exploded. The next thing I remember was being shoved roughly forward. I fell, straight and hard, in the dispassionate grip of gravity, and after long enough for me to start to suck in a breath, I hit the water. It was only about 6 or 7 inches deep, and beneath it was swirling soft mud. I had a brief pang for my leather duster, and then I sank down into the water, my hands slipping into the mud and getting stuck there. Cold water burbled around my face and felt nice for a moment on my aching shoulder. Someone grabbed me by the collar and hauled me out of the water to sit me on my butt. Hands steadied me, and I sat with my shoulder aching and my head whirling until I could squint up and see who was there. Murphy dropped to one knee in the water beside me and smoothed back my damp hair.
"Dresden," she said, "you okay?"
I took a look around me. I was at the bottom of an enormous pit, a square, maybe 10 feet deep and twice that across. Muddy water, maybe from the rain, covered the bottom of the pit, and the moon tinted its surface silvery brown. Directly above the pit's center, maybe 40 feet above me, was a square made of wooden planks, maybe 5 by 5. It was a hunter's platform, suspended by ropes, leading it from the circle of evergreens that surrounded the pit. I could see the tops of the trees against the moon and the clouds.
"Dresden," Murphy said again, "are you all right?"
"I'm alive," I said.
I blinked at her for a second and said,
"I thought they killed you."
Her blue eyes sparkled briefly. Her hair was a mess, and her jeans and flannel shirt were rumpled and soaked with muddy water. She was shivering from the cold.
"I thought they had too. But they stopped as soon as Denton took you out and tossed me down here."